This promise is what I want all of you to remember. This is the basis for our study. I am rising up this nation to send forth my word. It is for the world and not for themselves that they arise. They means Indians, the people living in India. I am giving them freedom for the service of the world. This is what was the real essence of the Alipur Ashram Sadhana. So all these what we are reading is for service of the world. Next. So this is what we were discussing yesterday. Generally what happens when we come to the so-called spiritual sadhanas, there is always a defect at the center. The intellect has been interested. We are reading it because we are interested. The heart is attracted towards it. The will has strung itself to the effort. But the whole nature has not been taken captive by the divine. This is what we should aspire for. It is not just the few hours which we spend in studying these things. But your entire life must be an offering to the divine, and then he can mold it. And if there is even a very single defect at the center, the problem is you can go back. We should always remember this point. If you are not progressing, that means you are falling down. Because even if you don't do anything, the world moves on. Or perhaps there is an effort not favored by the whole nature. A decision or turn imposed by an intellectual influence or dictated by personal affection or admiration for someone who is himself consecrated and devoted to the highest. This is the real danger which awaits us. We try to interpret what the Guru has said. One of the greatest mistakes we do in spiritual sadhana is in trying to evaluate what the Guru has written after he is not there to confirm your supposition. That's the danger with which all spiritual organizations are suffering. Be careful about it. We need not question anything. The life of the Guru is our message. You just follow how he lived. don't try to interpret, because what he has written is beyond time and space. And don't think that you can understand him in a better way than others. And in integral yoga, this becomes more important, because everyone has his own decisions to make. What we can do is, we can stick to this principle. I'm not talking about this book. I'm talking about the principles enunciated in it. It has only existed in the interest, the attraction or the endeavor. This is what we have to understand, whether you are just interested in it or you are going to give your entire life to it. And if you are not giving your entire life, and when I say entire life, it means the mind, the vital and the physical. All the three must be given to him. There has been an experiment, perhaps even eager experiment, but not a total self-giving to an imperative need of the soul. It is not the need of us, but the need of the soul, or to an unforsakable ideal. But when we read all these things, we become a bit downtrodden. Then why all this? Then remember what he says, even such imperfect yoga has not been wasted, for no upward effort is made in vain. This spirit you should understand. But that does not mean that you should give a small attempt always. Try to surrender completely. But if you can't even do it, it is not in vain. Nahi kalyana kut kachit durgatin tata gacchati. That is what Sri Krishna says in Gita. Whoever simply takes a simple step forward, he cannot again go back. He has already entered the path of yoga. It is a question of time only. But that time, if you can really try to understand the meaning of all these three books, but that doesn't mean that you are supposed to read only these three books. I am telling you, at least you read these three books within this week. Three books. The Synthesis of Yoga, The Life Divine, and Savitri. That must be the spirit. Not a casual thing that I will take it up when I get some time. This life must be important, and what you are doing in your day-to-day life is only a necessity designed by your master. The outward life we are living. You remember, you don't think that you are living that life and you are the decision maker in that life. Whether you are a husband or you have some responsibilities, you are a director, you are an actor. I have given you all the five lists: the politicians, the businessmen, the scientists, the actors, the teachers, the scientists. All who are working under different categories, we as the students of integral yoga should know that you are there because of the design of the Lord, whom Aurobindo says is the master of the works, the real master of the works. Then all life becomes yoga. But it should not be something what I am telling here and what you are hearing now, and the moment you cross the threshold you are gone. That should not happen. Next, the secret of success in yoga is to regard it not as one of the aims to be pursued in life, but as the one and only aim. Not as an important part of life, but as the whole of the life. This is the mantra which you should repeat daily. And when I say a mantra, I mean it is a mantra. Do it 108 times and see what happens. And I am not joking. This should be the inherent supporting thought of every action, every desire, every thought. In the beginning it may be difficult, naturally. But it won't be difficult if you practice it regularly. The one and only one aim and our whole life is yoga. That is what Sri Aurobindo meant when he said, all life is yoga. Next. What is the title? Self-surrender in Works, the Way of Gita. The life of human creature, as it is ordinarily lived, is composed of a half-fixed, half-fluid mass of very imperfectly ruled thoughts, perceptions, sensations, emotions, desires, enjoyments, acts, most customary and self-repeating. Mostly customary and self-repeating, in part only dynamic and self-developing, but all centered around a superficial ego. Ego. Now, let us try to understand the yoga of work, how we should do the yoga, the karma yoga. The first is, mostly what we do is customary and self-repeating, they have no value. You always try and be very careful when I am telling it, you should do it as an exercise. You just put a diary or something or a notebook. How many customary and self-repeating acts we do? They are useless for us. And ahara, nidra, bhaya, maidhunancha are the most customary and self-repeating activities which have no value. But they are a must. It doesn't mean that you should not eat and you should not sleep. But you should know they are not dynamic and self-developing. Which are the acts of your day-to-day life which are dynamic and self-developing, you should know. Even when you know this, you remember that is not a yoga of work if it is based on a superficial ego. That means if the work you are doing is because Mr. X or Mr. Y is doing, it is wrong. The name given to you is by nature, by fairing. So whatever work you are doing, if Ramakrishna is doing, it is a superficial ego. Do this, know the inner being. Is my activities being motivated by the inner being? Certainly not. So, customary and self-repeating, waste. Dynamic and self-developing, if they are based on superficial ego, even then it is a waste, but better than customary and self-repeating. Next. It is for this meaningful development of consciousness by thought, will, emotion, desire and actual experience, leading in the end to a supreme divine self-discovery, that man, the mental being, has entered into the material body. This is the seed in which the tree of yoga of works develops. This you should remember. Thought, your will. Unfortunately, many of us don't have any will. Will means to do or die. And many times, if you can't do it, we just sidetrack and say we'll have an alternative. And will never has an alternative. So we have thought, no will. Emotion, I don't think so. Emotion means which motivates you to act. Then you have to put a question mark whether you have any emotions or not. Desires, we have a lot of desires and very high sounding desires. Action, no action. If the higher the desire which you sound, the lesser the action towards it. You got the point what I am telling? I want to get a first class. Every student has a desire. But does he act according to that? No. Every example I am giving, you should put to yourself. Don't think about the student and that he has no action in his desire. How many of our desires we really put into action? And experience, leading in the end to a supreme divine self-discovery. So all these, your thoughts, your will, your emotion, your desire, your action and experience, out of them, the only thing is a very little desire comes into our experience. Only desire, not even thought. That man, the mental being, has entered into the material body. So this is the problem. You have to put your thoughts towards divine self-discovery. Put your will towards divine self-discovery. Put your emotion towards divine self-discovery. Your desire, action, and experience. To now, how many of us can say that even when we are reading this, we know that we are reading this for divine self-discovery? We have our own egoistic approaches. And I am not meaning in a negative sense. I am meaning it that this is not the cause for which we are doing all this. But Sri Aurobindo very specifically says, this material body has been given only for the self-discovery. Next. First, to inherit desire and no longer accept the enjoyment of desire as the ruling human motive. Self-explanatory, many of our desires, they rule us. So we should not allow those desires, at least taking a form of action. Let the desire be there, let it not be acted upon. The mental being too must undergo a new birth and a transfiguring change. This we will read later. Our confused and embarrassed ego-centered, small-motivated will and action. You see the adjectives he has given, and if you don't have those adjectives, we have to develop those adjectives. First of all, we should be embarrassed. You know what we mean by embarrassed? We should feel shy because we are ego-centered. Small-motivated. You don't have a large goal of serving the humanity of the world. That is what Sri Krishna said. That your first motive as an Indian, especially as a man who is interested in yoga, to be of service to the world. But we have only small motivations. Will and action must cease and make room for the total working of a swiftly powerful, lucidly automatic, divinely moved and guided, unfallen force. There must be implanted and activated in all our doings a supreme, impersonal, unfaltering and unstumbling will in spontaneous and untroubled unison with the will of the Divine. Next. We shall find that our action does not correspond with our inner light. This is for few months, this is the problem. What we do does not correspond with our inner light. It doesn't matter. When a small child is trying to learn to walk, his only goal is to walk. He falls, gets up. He falls, gets up. He walks. When a child is learning to walk, he has no goal for his walking. He has no goal that he will reach that place or this place or this place. The only goal is he should walk. What does it mean? When he wants to walk, he should be able to walk. If he does not want to walk, he should not walk. Similarly, the inner light first trains you. That is where we have to take the help of all the scriptures. All the seven stages of Raja Yoga, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, we'll come to that. Because in the process of learning, it is only the fundamental aspect of our sadhana is to control your thoughts. If you don't want to think, you should not think. If you want to think, you should think. Desire. If you want to have a desire, you should have a desire. If you don't want to have a desire, you should not have a desire. The same with the body. Your body must be tuned with the thoughts and actions, desires, what you have. These three practices are the basis of the three yogas. The yoga of works, which is known as karma yoga. You should know the spirit behind your actions. That is karma yoga. And what should be the spirit? Understanding the Supreme and surrendering to the Supreme. So our physical body should be in such a perfect shape and condition that it should become a perfect tool. Similarly, the desire body. Similarly, the mental body. These practices you have to practice. You have to develop your own systems which helps you. In Karma Yoga, the first six chapters of Gita gives you a lot of methodology. Select any one of it. Next, from 7th to 12th chapter, the divine devotion, Bhakti Yoga. You develop any one of those. And then you have in the last 13th to 18th chapter, Kshetra and Kshetrajna, the knowledge. That you cannot miss. You just can't say that I need not read it. Because even if you read the entire Gita, you need somebody who knows about it to tell you what is good for you. And luckily for us, we have a very direct, pointed guidance in this book for all these yogas. Now we are going ahead with Karma Yoga. How your actions must be performed. Next. A change of inner consciousness and nature, this is most important. In the beginning, that have to be accepted for some time. The difficulties when you are practicing the Karma Yoga, the difficulties you come when you are practicing the Bhakti Yoga, the difficulties you have when you are practicing the Jnana Yoga, they will come for some time. But you have to practice them. And you have to also practice the Raja Yoga. And you have to also practice the Hatha Yoga. There is no exemption for it. In integration, we just don't leave anything. We integrate everything. And when you integrate everything, you should know that the Hatha Yoga is very important for the physical body and the nervous body. And if this is not in correct tune, what is the use of the highest flights of imagination? For the previous sadhakas, that was good because they went there, liberated, gone. They were not worried of what is going to happen to this world. But an integral sadhaka goes there and brings it down to the physical plane. Then your physical plane must be perfect. And what is your physical plane? Your body and nervous system. So asanas and pranayama automatically becomes famous. And after that, we have this still evolving mental body. The annamaya and pranamaya koshas are completely evolved. But our mind has not evolved. But when we say this, we feel that probably nature has the role of developing the mind in humanity. Sri Aurobindo says it is wrong. It has already developed your mental body. What you are now seeing is a recoil because of some defect in your mental body. Because if you take the most savage individual in the world who does not know about any civilization, who does not know about languages, you can imagine such a savage man, is it not? Somewhere in the African jungle, who doesn't know about this modern world. But you accept in principle that if you bring him to the cities and train him for 10 years, he can become a scientist. He can become an engineer. So what does it mean? The savage has become a savage because of some defect in his mental nature. In previous higher evolutionary stage,
which he has to correct now as a savage. I think you could understand what it is. The same thing to all of us. So we are here not to develop the mental body, but to correct the mental defects which we have inherited from our previous developments of the mental body, and for some of us almost to the over mind level. So that is the guarantee which Sri Aurobindo gives, that your sadhana is waste. If you have passed BSc and you think that you have not studied 10th class and you start reading 10th class books, who is at fault? We are at fault. We have forgotten that we have reached that level. Why we have forgotten? Because there is a recoil. And nature is always right. You remember this principle. So that shows that all of us, and when I say all of us, in humanity all of us, those who were before us and those who are going to come after us, have always evolved a mental being. Manomaya Purusha. And that Manomaya Purusha was supposed to train himself for the descent. But there is a fault, there is a defect. That defect, Sri Aurobindo says, is individually different from man to man. That is why from the mental level onwards, your integral sadhana becomes diversified, depending upon your defect. But before reaching that, at least you must have reached the samadhi state. And I guarantee you, that those who have studied up to 10th class have reached the Savitarka Samadhi state as given in Patanjali Yoga Sutras. When I come to the chapter Samadhi, I will prove it. That anyone who has passed the 10th class exam is above Savitarka Samadhi. Then what are the three steps for him to remain according to the Samadhi? Nirvitarka Samadhi, Savichara Samadhi and Nirvichara Samadhi. And many of the people who are interested in yoga, whether our yoga or their yoga or any yoga, because wherever you have an inherent aspiration towards the divine, whether you are a Muslim or a Christian or a Buddhist or someone XYZ, you have reached Nirvichara Sthiti also. Nirvichara Samadhi also. So it's when I find people trying to do all those nonsensical experiments for Nirvitarka Samadhi and Savitarka Samadhi, you are wasting your time. Because we do not have a very clear-cut definition of what Samadhi is. And later, we will get the real picture of Samadhi in Sri Aurobindo's own words. Next. The Gita, at its cryptic close, may seem by its silence to stop short of the solution for which we are seeking. What is the solution? What is the goal of the mental body? Where the desire body and the physical body are completely controlled. It passes at the borders of the highest spiritual mind and does not cross them into the splendors of the supramental light. This is from where we have recoiled since 5,000 years. And this should give us a great boost. Because if you have already been there, the only thing is, you must be able to see along with Arjuna, Nasto Mohaha, Smrutir Labdhva. I remember that I have passed all these stages. Satprasadatmayachita. And remember, until this helps, you can't remember it. That is why he says, Nasto Mohaha, Smrutir Labdhva. Satprasadatmayachita, Sthitosnigata Sandehaha. Now, I don't have any doubt. And where there is no doubt, there is faith. So, faith is a state of where you have no doubt. When you have some faith, you don't have any doubt. I remember a story that a newly married couple were going in a ship. Suddenly the ship entered a typhoon, a tufan. Everybody was running here and there, here and there, here and there. And this gentleman, the husband, was sitting quietly and trying to read, because it is lurking and jerking, therefore he is not able to read, but he is trying to read some novel. His wife became very angry. You see, all these fellows are dancing and jumping and doing all this, and you are just trying to read a novel. He heard for some time and he took a dagger, put it on his wife's neck and said, "Are you afraid?" She said, "No." She laughed and said, "Throw away that knife first. What nonsense you are doing." He said, "You are not afraid?" "No, I am not afraid." "Why?" "Because I have faith in you. You won't kill me. The same faith I have in the God. The weather, though so turbulent, I have faith in God. So what should you do? Sit and read a novel." Not saying that you have faith in God and then abusing Him for what you are not getting. Got the point? And it is, and at a secret of dynamic and not only static, identity with inner presence is its highest mystery of absolute surrender to the divine guide, Lord and inhabitant of our nature is the central secret. So the central Purusha, the central being, what Sri Aurobindo calls our Jivatma, and then the soul and the Chaitya Purusha, three in one, is what he says, the divine guide. And that has been revealed in Gita also. But how that presence can be brought down is not revealed. Free expression out of his supreme inward silence is the secret. This, whatever I have written it in these capitals, are mantric in nature. This is our goal. You go on repeating it. You should express yourself physically. You should express yourself vocally. You should express yourself in thought, but in silence. Next. The mind writes on the fiddle of natural forces, balances on a poise between several possibilities, inclines to one side or another, settles and has the sense of choosing, but it does not see. It is not even dimly aware of the force behind that has determined its choice. Now, this is the best exercise you can have in your day-to-day life. You choose every time. Whenever you choose something, are you aware of the force behind which has determined its choice? Think over those things. This is an exercise to be practiced. Any choice, somebody offers you a Coke and you say, "No, I don't want a Coke, I want Pepsi." This differentiation is not because there is a swirl of natural forces in you and you think that your desires are controlling that particular action, but there is something behind it which has determined its choice. If you can be aware of that force, half of the battle is won. Behind this petty instrumental action for the human will, there is something vast and powerful and eternal that oversees the strength of inclination, presses on the turn of the wheel. This is most important. Every little thing we do is based on will. If you don't want it, you can't do it. Am I clear about that? You do because you will it to do it. But unfortunately, we don't know what willing is. That is what in our Puja Vidhana and others we say as the Sankalpa. The Sankalpa is the divine will. He has decided that this process must go on. The only plus point we as human beings have is to we can speed up
the goal towards which you are going. You just can't change the steps of evolution. But you can grow it very fast, and a child's birth is the best example of this course of evolution. 200 years back, a child was born. The entire evolution was behind him. Now after 200 years a child is born, don't you think that behind this child, the 200 years extra evolution is there? Am I clear about that? So, this is a normal time scale evolution. But suppose you can speed up the evolution. Then what happens? You who were born with this present stage of evolution behind you can have the entire goal of evolution behind you. Then what happens? It becomes yoga. Eh? Another birth. Am I clear about the birth? Behind every birth, the evolution up to that point is there. If you have a sixth generation computer and a first generation computer, the evolution behind the first generation computer is only up to 1940s. And now you have a new computer, the evolution is up to 2000. But now you suppose you can evolve in a very fast rate. That becomes yoga for a new birth in evolution. That is what he says. Behind these petty instrumental actions of the human will, there is something vast and powerful and eternal that oversees the trend of inclination and presses on the turn of the will. And if you are interested, you can keep it in capital. The turn of the will is a very beautiful world, very beautiful world with so many possibilities in it. You turn the will, you turn yourself into any direction. Next. This is the power or presence meant by the Gita when it speaks of the Lord within the heart of all existences, who turns all creatures as if mounted on a machine by the illusion of nature. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hrudde chirjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. If you allow nature, the maya will control you. The evolution proceeds as it should proceed. But if you are a yogi, the actions must differ. The yoga of works, how you do the works must differ in their orientation, in their turn. Am I clear about the word turn? You have to turn. Ordinary, he has too much in him of the obscure earth inertia, and this earth inertia can be controlled only by asana and pranayama. These are my words, they are not Sri Aurobindo's. What I have given in brackets, Sri Aurobindo has not told them. But the earth inertia, you can conquer only by asanas and pranayamas. And a troubled, ignorant animal force, you can control this animal life force in us by jnana, karma, bhakti and raja yogas to be a soul of light and bliss, or even a mind of the harmonious will and knowledge. So that is where I am trying to tell you that you just can't neglect asanas, pranayamas, jnana yoga, karma yoga, bhakti yoga and raja yoga. But not only you have to utilize them with the term of your will towards the supreme goal. Next. In the field of action, desire takes many forms. We are coming to the crux of yoga of works, karma yoga. But the most powerful of all its vital self-craving or seeking is after the fruit of our works. We always desire the fruit of the works. And you have to turn your will in such a way that you do the work as if it is the most important thing in the world, but you are not worried about the fruit of the action.
it comes by practice. It is quite possible. Therefore, the first rule of action we are reading, you know the chapter study we are reading about? You remember? Or you have already forgotten? The yoga of words. So, throughout we are going to learn about how to act. So, what is the first rule? It is known as the Nishkama Karma. Karmanye vadhikaraste ma phalesha kadachana ma karma phalahe turbhu. This is important for us. Ma te sango svakarmani. When you are not interested in the fruit of the work, what happens? You are not interested in doing the work also. You don't want to act. Be careful of that. Mate sango akarmani. Nishkama karma does not mean that should become akarmanya. You have to act very fast and at such a rate to capture the entire scale of millennium of years of evolution. And you should not be worried about the fruits of nature. A contradiction. But probably the entire world is a contradiction. And without contradiction, probably we cannot speak. Next. The test is placed out in an absolute equality of the mind and the heart to all results, to all reactions, to all happenings. If good fortune and ill fortune, if respect and insult, if reputation and obloquy, if victory and defeat, if pleasant event and sorrowful event, leaves us not only unshaken but untouched, free in the emotions, free in the nervous reactions, free in the mental view, not responding with the least disturbance or vibration in any part of nature, then we have the absolute liberation to which Gita points us, but not otherwise. So the first formula is Nishkama Karma. The next formula is Samatvam Yoga Uchyate, balance. Balance between all these. Victory or defeat, respect or insult, there must be a balance. So we can have, as Sri Aurobindo has said, the Sanskrit word gives very easily the purport of these things. The first is Nishkama Karma, you are not worried of the result. The next is Samatvam Yoga Uchyate. Next. The tiniest reaction is a proof that the discipline is imperfect. Externally you may pose that you have everything under control. But you must be aware that even a tiniest reaction should not come in your desire body or in your mental body. And that some part of us accepts ignorance and bondage as its law and clings still to the old nature. Because until and unless the Nishkama Karma and equality in yoga, Samatvam, this must be the first practicing instrument for the yogi. Are you becoming an expert in Nishkama Karma? Have you with full heart the audacity to say that whatever I am doing is not influencing me? Samatvam Yoga Uchyate. If it influences, still the ignorance is there. Next. Yoga Chakru Karmani Sangam Tekva Dhananjaya Siddha Siddhyo Samabhutva Samatvam Yoga Uchyate. Equality, renunciation of all desires for the fruit of our works, action done as a sacrifice to the Supreme Lord of our nature and of all nature, these are the three first Godward approaches in the Gita's way of Karma Yoga. So this is what we have to learn. Samatvam Yoga Uchyate, Nishkama Karma, and in the end offering it as a sacrifice to the God. And before that, before you can offer anything to the God, it should be a very specialized action. Yoga Satkuru Karmani, as you said, a very specialized action. And that is what in Gita it is said, Yogaha Karmasu Kaushalam. You are not interested in the result. You are not worried about the failure or success, but you should work as if an expert is working. Yogaha Karmasu Kaushalam. Then only it can be offered as a
sacrifice. Next.
Neha bhikrama nashasti prachyavayo navidyate svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mato bhayat.
Now we are trying to practice these three things.
What are these three things? Nishkama karma, samatvam yoga uchyate, and yoga karma sukausalam.
You are practicing. And naturally, when you are practicing it, you can't be perfect in your first attempt. And probably sometimes, it may take years. Then, here the Lord proves, in this, what in this? When you are practicing this Nishkama Karma, when you are trying to be Samatvam, when you are trying to be a Kushala, in this there is no loss of effort, nor is there any transgression. You cannot come down. Even a little of this dharma protects from great fear. So that is a guarantee when you are practicing it, a great hope and faith that there is no recoiling here. In nature there may be a recoil, but in yoga practice there is no recoil. Whatever you practice, even that little iota will be there, and if you don't continue it in this life, you will continue it in the next life. That is the guarantee given by, don't wait for the next life, I am giving only you 6 months. Next. I titled The Sacrifice, the Drying Food, and the Lord of the Sacrifice. This sacrifice is the most important word in Sanatana Dharma. And this Sanatana Dharma, you remember, is not ancient. We call it Sanatana because it was discovered way back. So it is the future dharma also. You try to remember this point. Later I will come back to it, because if I dwell on that, this chapter will go. So, the yajna part you remember. What is the yajna? Where you offer your action with expertise. If there is no expertise, it cannot be offered to the God. For example, I read a story in my schedule. There was a minister to a king who always used to say that everything that happens is good for us. So whatever happens, he always says it is good for us. So one day what happened, the king was cutting some fruit and his finger was cut and he had to bandage. The minister was there. He used his normal words. What did he say? Everything is good for us. It is good for you to have your finger cut. He became very angry, the king. He said, put him in jail. I will come back. He was preparing to go for what he called that? Hunting. I will see when I come back that you are beheaded. He went to the hunting and there he fell into the hands of some tantrics and they were about to give him the bali, sacrifice him. And then they saw this cut. And nothing which is pure and perfect can be offered as a sacrifice. So they left him. The king came back. He was very happy. He said, yes, you are right. Whatever happens is good. But I gave you what is good there, he said. If you have not gave me, I would have accompanied you. And when I accompanied you, I don't have any cuts. So I would have been offered as a sacrifice. Whatever happens is good. That spirit you should remember. But this sacrifice, what I am trying to stress is, these three conditions are necessary for yajna. Are very much necessary for yajna. The first thing for yajna is that you should do it without any desire. Next, samatvam. Whatever happens of the result, you don't worry. You continue the yajna. And third, you should do the yajna in a very specialized way. And because we have forgotten these three fundamentals of yajna, the great science of ritualistic yajna is gone forever. It has to be revived again. That is why, title,
he gives two more chapters for Yajna. Sri Aurobindo talks about ascent of sacrifice in two separate chapters. Chapter Ascent 1 and Ascent 2. And you understand now what are the three? The first is Nishkama Karma Yoga, and it should ascend to equality. And then it should ascend to expertise in action. The law of sacrifice is the common divine action that was thrown out into the world in its beginning. And what is exactly the law of sacrifice is to limit and correct and gradually to eliminate the errors of an egoistic and self-divided creation. I think it is very clear. That is exactly what a scientist does. What does he do? He limits his experiment, gets a result, changes the limit. What we science we call it as parameters. All of you are able to understand? We are trying to find out a formula for cancer. So we do some experiments. When you are doing this experiment, naturally you cannot do the other experiments. You are limited. But after doing this experiment, you correct the experiment and again practice it. And again there is a limit. This limit and correction, gradually eliminate the errors of an egoistic and self-divided creation. The experiments we are doing is to remove the egoistic problems and self-divided orientation in life. This we should remember, the law of karma. What is the most essential thing in Indian way of life, we have completely forgotten. We talk about destiny, but we have forgotten about the prarabdha, sanchita and agami karmas. And we forget that there is a great law of limit and correction, which is important for that particular type of activity. And there we go into the astrology and this and that. If you are interested, you can go to it. It helps a lot. Next. Now you understand what is sacrifice? That has sacrificed itself into the body, into this limitation, for a particular experiment. And we are not aware of that experiment. We are living our own lives, in which only the body, the desires and the mind are important, whereas the thought, the desire and the body should be used as an experimental instrument, tools. That is the yoga of works. Next. Indeed, sacrifice is imposed. And where need be compelled? You understand this? You are compelled to stay alive in this body. By whom? If you can find him, the real purpose of our activities can understand. Am I able to make you understand? You are forced to live in this body. Many of us don't like this body. But you are forced to live it. Compelled even from those who do not consciously recognize. And many people who are living, they don't know that they are being compelled to live in that particular body, in that particular post, in that particular liking or disliking environment. But the fact is, you are being compelled. And the entire process of yoga is to know that master of works who is compelling us to be like this. Next. This one. Yajñārthāt karma no yatra lokoyam karma bandhanaḥ tadardham karma kaunteya mukta sanga samāchara. Whatever action you do without an intention of sacrifice binds you. So the entire spirit of your actions must be a yajna. Now, again you remember what yajna is. It must have three qualities. That is why he said the triune path. First is nishkama karma. Next, you are not affected by the result, samatvam. And third is expertise in doing these actions. Next. When we eat, this yajna spirit, you must have it when you eat also, when you drink also. Now this will break. When you are drinking your cup of water or something, when you eat, we should be conscious that we are giving our food to that presence in us. It must be a sacred offering in a temple, and the sense of a mere physical need or self-gratification must pass away from us. Next. Our very inspiration and respiration, mind you, even the way you are breathing, a very difficult task master Sri Aurobindo is. That is easy. You offer the food you are eating, okay, you will remember, swaha, swaha. But what does he say? Our very inspiration and respiration, shvasa, our very heartbeat can and must be made conscious in us as a living rhythm of the universal sacrifice. The way you are breathing, it has three qualities. What is the three qualities? It should be a nishkama karma. Probably it is. Probably, because exactly it is not. But on the outer being, of course, it is a nishkama karma. And then what should you have? You should have a samatvam. What do you mean by samatvam? In anger, your breath rate changes. When you are sleeping, your breath rate changes. You are affected by the desires. But how should be the breath? Equal. Samatvam. And then what should be? You should be an expert in breathing. In 3 days, Sri Aurobindo attained it. He learned how to breathe and his mind was gone. You know that story? I can't say it is a story, it is an incident, a milestone in his life. So your breathing must be a sacrifice if you can breathe like him. You breathe in such a way that your mind will not be there, because there is a very direct link between breath and mind. If you can have a very slow, deep, rhythmic breathing, you conquer your mind. That is what is known as Ajapa Gayatri. Next. All must be done for the divine, all must be directed towards the divine, nothing must be attempted for ourselves as a separate existence. This is the problem. Whatever you are doing, it should be for the divine, not for you. And what we are doing now, even studying this book, is probably for us only. For our interest of gaining knowledge, for our satisfaction or the desire that we could master this book. You understand? It is the orientation that must change. The problem is in the education system. This is my addition, because in our education system, it is the competition which makes you. And when you compete and you don't cooperate, there can be no yoga. Next. These are the two signs. One, making our completed conversion and consecration to the great quest. And the other, the final acceptance by the divine of our sacrifice. Jai Guru Dev. Talking about the sacrifice aspect of the yoga, especially how the sacrifice is based on 3 specific principles: nishkama, sabatva, and kaushalam. And all this must be first turned towards the psychic being and later to the supramental discipline. Now this psychic being, in letters of, on integral yoga, Sri Aurobindo has given a very clear definition of what they are. I am just presenting it. The phrase central being in our yoga is usually applied to the portion of the divine in us which supports all the rest and survives through death and birth. Very clear? So central being is that portion of our consciousness which survives birth and death. The central being has two forms. Above it is Jivatman, our true being, of which we become aware when the higher self-knowledge comes. So about the Jivatman, we can't now understand. We can understand it only when the higher knowledge comes. And it is above us. Below, it is the psychic being which stands behind mind, body and life. So this much we are very clear. We have a physical body, we have a life desire and a mind. Behind all these three, the consciousness which is controlling all these three, but of which we are not aware, is the psychic inner being. We are aware of the outer being, or we can say the surface being, the personality, the vyaktitva. Now you can understand a vyaktitva, a personality, is the outer superficial being. We know our thoughts, but we don't know our subconscious thoughts. We don't know our above thoughts, superconscious thoughts. But we are aware of the normal day-to-day behavioral existence, what we understand as the outer being. Just as we have our outer thoughts, we have our inner thoughts. Just as we have our outer desires, we have our inner desires. Just as we have a physical activity going on, we have an inner physicality. Clear? So we are aware only of the outer being. Behind the outer being is the inner being, which has also all these three. It has a physicality, it has a desire, it has a thought. That which controls the inner being is the psychic being. And the outer being is just a helpless straw on the waters, on so many forces that are acting in the world. The Jivatman is above the manifestation in life and presides over it. The psychic being stands behind the manifestation in life and supports it. So Jivatman is above life. Psychic being is in life, but what that psychic being is, we are not aware. That is what in Sanskrit is known as the Chaitya Purusha. It stands behind manifestation in life and supports it. So what we have the outer being about which we all know, but even about the outer being, we don't know its subconscious and superconscious levels. We don't know the sleep state. We don't actually know what our dreams are guiding towards us, what guidance we are getting from dreams. But it is only the outer being. And behind the outer being is the Annamaya Purusha, the Pranamaya Purusha and the Manomaya Purusha. And these three behind, in life, the psychic being stands. But the psychic being is not controlling it, he is just observing it. And mind you, it is the psychic being who has given you this form, not the parents. The parents are only the instruments. It is your psychic being in life, the lost line in life, that supports your inner three. Manomaya, Pranamaya and Annamaya Purusha. And above that, the outer being is developed. So these are the layers which we have to pierce through. Next. The central being, the Jivatman, which is not born or evolved, but presides over the individual birth and evolution, puts forward a representative of himself on each plane of consciousness. The most important thing is representative of himself. Representative of what? Jivatman. That is the inner Manomaya, inner Pranamaya, and inner Annamaya Purusha. They are the representatives, the inner beings. And the surface beings are the representative of the inner beings. On the mental plane, it is the true mental being, Manomaya Purusha. On the vital plane, the true vital being, Pranamaya Purusha. On the physical plane, the true physical being, Annamaya Purusha. Next. The Jivatman, soul, sometimes it is known as the spark also, the spark soul, and psychic being are three different forms of the same reality, and they must not be mixed up together. They are three, but they are one, but on different planes. Above manifestation, it is Jivatma. And that we may call it as the central being. Not may, it is the central being. And around that, when you come into existence, into manifestation, first the psychic being approaches the Father. 3 months the psychic being will be with the Father, and then it goes into the mother's womb for 9 months. That is the 1 year period that the first Rig Veda mantra has shown. So many people say, if you can only know the burden of bearing children in the womb. But now, we also can say, no, for 3 months we bear the psychic being. And the psychic being, when it enters the mother's womb, develops the three inner, purushas. And when it comes out, the three inner purushas mature into the three outer beings. Got the concept clear? The Jivatman or spirit, as it is called in English, is self-existent above the manifested or instrumental being. It is superior to birth and death. Always the same, the individual self or Atman. It is the eternal true being of the intrinsic. That is called as Jivatma, which is beyond manifestation. It does not be, it is not born, nor does it die. As Sri Krishna says, Ajopisan, Avyayatma, Bhutana, Nisharopisan. But what does this Jivatma do? When he comes into the being, Ajopisan, Avyayatma, Bhutana, Nisharopisan, above the manifestation, in manifestation he becomes Prakrutim Swam Adhishtaya Sambhavami Atma Mayaya. The Maya is in the inner being. The outer being is not even worried about the Maya. He is just tossed by the waves of thoughts and desires and actions, and he thinks he is living. Next. The soul is the spark of the divine, which is not seated above the manifested being, but comes down into the manifestation to support this evolution in the material world. So you can say that the Jivatma and the Chaitya Purusha, in between them is the soul as a connecting link. It is at first an undifferentiated power of the divine consciousness. He is talking about the soul. It is at first an undifferentiated power of the divine consciousness containing all possibilities which have not yet taken form. Even the future possibilities are there in the soul, but to which it is the function of evolution to give form. So it is the soul which is a spark, that is why it is known as the spark soul of the Jivatma, for the three centers of the Chaitya Purusha. The spark is there in all living beings, from the lowest to the highest. Next. The psychic being is formed by the soul. The psychic being is formed by the soul in its evolution. It supports the mind, vital, body, grows by their experiences, carries the nature from life to life. It is the psychic or Chaitya Purusha. Yes. Chaitya Purusha. Very clear one. So grows by their experiences is the Chaitya Purusha. And how does the Chaitya Purusha come? From the soul. And what is the soul? A spark of the unmanifesting Jivatma. So indirectly, Jivatma is experiencing all these. But because it can't experience in that level, even now I am feeling it. But we will discuss it later, because I have 100 slides to go. At first it is veiled by mind, vital and body, but as it grows, it becomes capable of coming forward and dominating the mind, life and body. So this is what we should happen. What the Chaitya Purusha has formed and is as a central being now, at present it is not controlling our outer being. It is not controlling our thoughts, it is not controlling our desires, it is not controlling our actions. But what by yoga we mean is, first you should achieve this control. And until this control is not achieved, no yoga is possible, leave alone the higher yogas. So, you should be very clear of how your psychic being, Chaitya Purusha, is dominating you. It is not dominating us now. And once when you dominate, what happens? The guiding law of spiritual experience can only come by an opening of the human consciousness to the divine consciousness. The divine consciousness, Jivatma. And the opening of the human consciousness. How can it be done? Through the Chaitya Purusha and the soul, the spark. There must be the power to receive in us the working and command and dynamic presence of the divine Shakti. We should have the presence. You should not say the divine is working in me. You should feel that he is working in you. And surrender. And when he is working, you will not say you wait. You should surrender. It is that surrender and that control which brings the guidance. Next. Most important is the Prakriti, not the Purusha. That is always, I said, you always remember, it is by what we call by default. When I say surrender, it means to the Shakti. Next. In accordance with the triple character of the sacrifice, what is the triple character? You again remember? Nishkama, equality and expertise. We may divide works two into a triple order, the works of knowledge, Jnana Shakti, the works of love, Kriya Shakti, the works of will and life, Ichha Shakti, and see how this more plastic spiritual rule applies to each province and affects the transition from the lower to the higher nature. Next. The yogin's distinction from other men, I can say, this is the most important aspect of life which we should find. What is it that is presses from inside to express you as what you are? Am I clear? There is an inner pressure which is pressing you to express yourself. And there, the three things are given. One is, of course, the Annamaya and Pranamaya, and then Manasu, and then Buddhi. And beyond Buddhi, what is there, it is that which pressing you. And now we should understand the difference between the mind and the Buddhi. But for the present, you just remember, mind is like a library. It contains all the data. And Buddhi is that which decides which data it is supposed to use. So Buddhi is the deciding factor. And Manas is the, what we should say, gathering factor. And unfortunately in our present day education, it is the gathering factor which is important. We are never telling to our students or to our wards or to our children that you should know how to decide. Many times when I go to a hotel, I ask someone, what do you want to eat? He says, as you wish. I ask another friend, he says, as you wish. It is not my house, they can eat whatever they want. even that small decision making capacity is vanishing. When someone, you go to a house and they ask, will you want a cup of tea or coffee? You say, I'll give whatever you want. You have been offering a decision, give the decision. At least the yogi must give a decision. At least in these small things, if you can't decide, how can you decide when the big things are there? So the buddhi aspect is the deciding factor. You should decide and stick to it. Because you have decided after taking everything into consideration, the pros and cons. Without taking the pros and cons, you don't decide, is it not? So when you have decided, and because some X or Y says, if you change it, then what happened to your buddhi? Got the point? So a yogi must be very firm in his decision. Buddhi. Decision means indirectly the buddhi. Next. There can be this one, what I have underlined, you try to concentrate, but accept or repel an activity of the mind according to feeling, insight or experience. Now, the buddhi has to decide. The mind has a lot of gathered information. Then what it has to do, until and unless the inner presence or power of light decides for it and says you do this, until then what you have to do? You accept or repel an activity of the mind according to your own feelings, insight or experience. So never say that I will wait for the intuition to dawn. It won't come like that. But when you have gone deciding, the intuition dawns. That is what exactly scientific life is. What does science do? It goes on experimenting. And while experimenting, it records the experiment. And then it decides what is best in an experiment, what is best in the next experiment, till it gets the real clear illumination. The illumination, of course, comes from the scientist also from above. But he prepares himself for the illumination by the actions, by the deciding factor. What do you decide? Whether you are working for the egocentric cause or you are working for the present. That is where your decision must be motivated. Next. Now, when you are doing these experiments, mind you, it has not dawned you. You don't have an illumined mind. You have this, a great gathering of material in your mind. And you are trying your best to your knowledge to live according to the present. As you think, you are not yet aware of the present, then what happens? It is possible at any period of the inner spiritual progress that one may experience an extension rather than a restriction of the activities. There may be an opening of new capacities of mental creation and new provinces of knowledge by the miraculous touch of the yoga shakti, aesthetic feeling, the power of artistic creation in one field or many fields together, talent or genius of literary expression, a faculty of metaphysical thinking, any power of eye or ear or hand or mind power may awaken where none was apparent before. So your progress in sadhana, even though that illumination is not there, I am not even talking of the super mind or over mind or intuitive mind. I'm talking about the illumined mind, just a bit higher than the higher mind. Then also you get all these possibilities of yoga shakti. Certainly you will find that there is an expansion of your activities. Now your activities are not limited to your particular chosen field of action. It expands. And this expansion, when it comes, you be sure that you are opening to the higher mind. So these are some indications by which you can know whether you are expanding or suppose if you are not growing, a restriction is coming in, then be sure that three types of unwanted powers are acting on us, an asura, a pishacha and a rakshasa. I don't want to dwell in those three things because there is no use in talking about negative powers. Because you talk about them and they come here. Think of the devil. So no, we won't talk about them. But you remember that there are three possibilities of misunderstanding the higher mind and thereby restricting your field of action. So whenever you find that in whatever organization or place you are being restricted, you try to understand. You don't put the blame on others. Always remember in integral yoga or in any kind of yoga, don't say because of that it happened. Because of him it happened. It happens because there is a fault in our Manomaya Purusha. Then the vital body, Kamamaya Purusha, or in the Annamaya Purusha. So that must be there. No restrictions must be there. It should always be growing. When you put a seed and it sprouts, and every day if it does not grow, it may not grow 3 feet in a day, but you are sure that it grows every day. Similarly in our yoga, if you don't find that expansion, remember there is something wrong in us. Try to correct it. And never try to blame others for our constriction. If you do that, it is no more a yoga. Because it is you who are going to evolve, not the other man. He is not at all worried about evolution. Huh? Next. The divine within may throw these latent riches out from the depths in which they were hidden. And now, this particular passage, you try to understand in two ways. You may get these powers because they were latent in you in previous birth. That is, they are a part of your psychic being. Or they may flow down from the higher force. You understand the difference? The latent powers about which we discussed in the previous slide, they may be yours because of your previous sadhana. Or maybe your surrender is of such a nature that the higher is able to flow into it. These are the two things he is mentioning here. Next slide. All the works of mind and intellect. Here we have in Sri Aurobindo's words itself the four planes of the mind. All the works of mind and intellect must be first heightened and widened. That is the first test of our yoga. Wherever your mind and intellect is placed, there must be a heightening. You understand what I mean by heightening? The elevation of your ability to think. And then it must be widened. More and more people must come into your fold. And then it can be illumined. Illumination comes from above. Heightened and widened is because of your past samskaras. You understand what I mean? Past samskaras means which are in your inner core of the being. In the psychic body or the Chaitya Purusha. And the illumination comes from above, lifted into the domain of higher intelligence. Afterwards, these two go together. If your psychic body opens and heightens and widens, illumination becomes a possibility. And now afterwards, translated into workings of a greater non-mental intuition. You remember, intuition is non-mental. Therefore, intuition has no logic. Mind thinks in a logical way, in a graded way, in a step-by-step way. But intuition, it just dawns. And when it dawns, it dawns. There is no explanation. Yes? Always the truth, no doubt about it. But partial truth. Because if Einstein, for intuition dawns, it gets a law of the physics. If an intuition dawns on a chemist, he will get a chemical law. If it dawns on a politician, he will give a new political party or something. But it is the truth. But still partial. That is why it is in the mental plane. But it is the truth. No doubt about it. But a time-bound and subject-bound truth. But a truth. Non-mental intuition these again transformed into the dynamic outpourings of the overmind. This is where majority of the Indians are living. They are destined to be in between overmind and intuition. And thanks for our education, we don't even know that such states exist. The fault is in our education. And therefore, wherever I go, I ask the people, form a study circle where these levels are clearly explained. It is not that every time you will be in the overmind and intuition, no. Not every time. When you are a principal, when you are in the college. If you are a chief minister, you are a chief minister when you are using those powers. But if not, you are a common man. Similarly, don't try to feel that always the intuition and overmind will work. But you should be in a place where if you put the switch on, you should know whether the intuition is coming or whether the overmind is coming. And unfortunately, our education is not even heightened and widened. I remember something happened in Russia. In our Indian embassy, the daughter of that ambassador, Russian ambassador from India, has gone there. She doesn't know Russian. She got a red eye. She went to the hospital. She doesn't know the. She just checked the mark of the eye and a red plus. She went in. There, the doctor said, "I can't help you." And there's so many, you know, the foreigners' way of expression things. Their body speaks more than what they speak. She asked for someone to translate what he's saying. Then they said, "He's saying, I can't do anything for you." That is what in the end he's meaning. And then this girl became panic-stricken. She came home and wept. And then the father phoned to the doctor and said, "You said you can't do anything?" He said, "Yes, I can't do anything because your girl has red-eyed in her right eye and I am a left-eye expert." You understand what is happening? You are not widening and heightening in our education. You are zeroing in and you say it is expertise. I don't mind as far as the physical aspects are concerned. But in the mind, heightening and enlightenment doesn't mean that you are expert only in a small scale. And that is why even an unread, unkept avadhuta can cure diseases which the expert can't cure. Because he is almost in the illumined mind, the avadhuta. He is not in an intuition and overmind, you remember it. But anyway, for us, he is better than the expert doctors. Next. In one of the decisive moments of the integral yoga, this is the most important rule which you should never forget. It is one of the decisive moments of integral yoga when this psychic being, you understand, that which has created your inner being, the Chaitya Purusha, being liberated, brought out from the veil to the front, can pour the full flood of its divination, feelings and impulsions on the mind, the life and body of the man, and begins to prepare the upbuilding of divinity in earthly nature. So this is the first step which you have to conquer. You always remember, Sri Aurobindo was very, very clear. Yoga means only a fast development, but not jumping the stages. You have to reach every stage, but you can reach every stage if you know that stage very clearly. So our first stage is bringing the psychic being into the forefront. And this is what represented by the entire activities of Sri Ramana Maharshi, the Sakshi Bhava. So, the first step in integral yoga is what Sri Ramana Maharshi advised his people to be a witness. You are not the thought, you are not the desire, you are not the body. We know clearly about his, especially, you heard about Paul Brunton, any one of you? So, if you read Paul Brunton's books, and I advise you to read his book, Hidden Teachings, Beyond Yoga, yes. Wonderful book.
But that is an elementary basic course in integral yoga, you remind it. Hidden Teaching Beyond Yoga and The Wisdom of the Over Self. These are the two books. The Hidden Teaching Beyond Yoga and The Wisdom of the Over Self. Beautiful books. And I guarantee you, if you start the first page, you will read till the last. It is not like Sri Aurobindo's book. It is like a novel. Wonderful reading. Next. The integral yoga, refusing to rely upon the fragile stuff of mental and moral ideals, puts its whole emphasis in this field on three central dynamic processes. You remember these three. And always, every day, when you go to sleep, if you can answer these three, you will progress very far. And do it regularly. Don't say, yes, I will try. No trying. You should do it. In one teacher, in SSA classes, you know about the Siddha Samadhi Yoga? About Rishi Prabhakarji. He said, you please try to give me your pen. So the man got up and gave the pen. He said, I didn't ask you to give me the pen. I said, you try to give me the pen. Can you give it? Either you give the pen or you don't give the pen. Can you go on trying to give the pen? You understood the difference? So don't try to put these practices. You put them into practices. What is it? Answers to this. The development of the true soul or psychic being to take the place of the false and soul of desire. You should answer very honestly every day. If you succeeded in any one point where the psychic being has taken the place of the outer being, our conscious being, then the sublimation of human into divine love. We should understand what love is and what divine love is. The present day love is, if you don't love me, I will kill you. But real love is, I like that song very much. I don't know if you think that what silly man is he, taking classes in integral yoga and talking about film songs. But there is a song, One-Sided Love, the benefits of one-sided love. Arya. He talks about the benefits of one-sided. He says, if the other man does not love me, what is the harm? I am loving. That is enough. That is sublimation. That is where I say, the filmmakers are more tuned to these descents of forces, even though occasionally it doesn't matter. For example, the Munna Bhai MBBS, Gandhigiri. They are very important for the desire, emotional, vital body. This is where it is. In seeing these pictures, there is a possibility of sublimation. Because you are seeing with hundreds of people tuned to that adoration. At least at that moment when you are seeing the picture. And that's why such pictures I always take my friends to a movie hall. Not sitting before the TV and get the CD. Because there you don't have the group effect. The group effect is also important in integral yoga. You understood now the sublimation of human into divine life? And those who are interested may see the film Arya. And then the elevation of consciousness from its mental to its spiritual and supramental plane. This of course we will not discuss. Because first let us understand what samadhi is. Because the mind going into the spiritual level can only happen when you are expert in samadhi. And you remember, all our spiritual people's resting place is really a samadhi. It is not just a word. That is why if you can go there and sleep for 3 nights, you can understand what samadhi is, but you should go with that intent. Not seeing the time and saying that the bus time is over and I should have the darshan and come back. No use. 3 nights. Next. That is what I am telling about the problem with the mind.
First is, it must be sufficiently quieted. This sufficiently quieted is known as dharana in Patanjali Yoga Sutra. Sufficiently quieted, but it is not completely quieted. You are aware of others. And then steadied and subdued. Understandable? Steadied means to a particular point. Subdued means the other aspects of the mind running away from the point to which you are steadying it is subdued. And then you have to grow from the obscurity or inertia of the mind. The mind has got its own limitations. And when it reaches its limitations, it says, no, I won't go. And that is where when you feel the headaches, then the mind stops and the mind has got its own inertia, you stop understanding. And the best way at that time is to go into the divine love. And now probably this also doesn't convey anything. Then Arya, the movie Arya. Now, quieted mind, steadied and subdued mind, which crosses its own inertia, then that which is hidden, our inmost being, is able to come forward and illumine the rest and take up the lead in the sadhana. And once it takes the lead of the sadhana, you are on the track. Till then, it is you have to suffer, you have to decide, and you have to do the sadhana. And once the psychic being, the Chaitya Purusha, takes up, then you have to do nothing but you allow him to do. In Sri Aurobindo's life also, he very clearly mentions it. Before he was arrested, he got a very clear order that you leave politics. He didn't leave. Then what did the Chaitya Purusha do? Jai. And then he understood. And then he came back to Pondicherry and stayed there for 40 years. But he did something very worthwhile. But I am trying to make you understand how the guidance comes and how you may miss it. And generally, we always miss it. Next. But the most intimate character of the psychic is its pressure towards the divine through a sacred love, joy and oneness. So if you can develop these three qualities, love, joy and oneness, you are developing the characteristics of the psychic. But what these lines mean is, whether you know or not, every human individual is being pressed by the psychic being to go towards his guru. That is where I told you in Siddhi Sai's life, so many people were influenced even before knew about Sai to come to him. And then our being in this class is certainly of a higher nature than those who are coming to Sai. I am not criticizing Sai, but I am telling you the difference between Sai devotees and us in a positive sense. If it brings your egoism, then be careful. You go down below the Sai sadhakas. Next. Ascent of sacrifice, the works of love, the works of life. The first ascent, you understood? The Chaitya Purusha must dominate. That is the first ascent of the sacrifice. What type of sacrifice? These three types of works: Nishkama Karma, Samatva and Kausala. These must be offered so that the psychic being comes forward. The first ascent is over. Now the second ascent. It is therefore through the sacrifice of love, works and knowledge that the psychic being, as the leader and priest of the sacrifice, that life itself can be transformed into its own true spiritual figure. Now you understand, now whatever you do is an offering to your Chaitya Purusha, psychic being. That means what? Whatever you are doing is completely controlled by Chaitya Purusha. Then whatever you do is an offering to him. Now whatever we are doing now is an offering to our false ego. It is our false ego which is taking the responsibilities of what we are doing. But when the first ascent is over, it is the Chaitya Purusha, the psychic being, who will take the responsibility. That means what? Whatever you are doing, thinking or desiring is an offering, is a sacrifice to the Chaitya Purusha. Now what is going to happen? Next verse. All love is adoration. Now, we have finished about the words and the knowledge aspect of it. Now we are going to the devotional aspect, the bhakti yoga. But in words, then what does he say? Though beautiful adjectives, through the poverty of the right and the smallness of its issues, we pray. But what is actually our prayer? It is a poverty of our right. We develop a Pancha Puja Vidhanam or a Shodashopachara Puja Vidhanam, and you can't grow, and you are praying to the infinite, and you are limited to only Pancha Puja. Poverty of, am I able to make you clear what I mean by the poverty? For prayer, there are infinite ways. Especially when you read the mother's prayers and meditations, you will understand the real prayer. But the outer being's poverty of the right and the smallness of the issues, even still, all worship, whether it is small or great, is an aspiration and therefore a preparation for the psychic being to come down. So don't stop your pujas. Change your attitude towards them. And if you stop it, everything is gone. Next. Nor will the man who knows be hasty at any time to shatter the image unless he can replace it in the heart of the worshipper by the reality. This is what Lord Krishna says. Don't disturb the people. You follow what is being done by the people until you give them a reality. You say all this puja is worship, all this power is worship, is nonsensical. But you can't give them an ideal. Then you are saying this will disturb his, and thereby you are going down. Next. You understood what I am telling them. This is for us to understand. You go out and say that no, you don't do this puja, you don't do this, there is no meaning in this and there is no meaning in this. Okay. Are you able to give him a better ideal? And if you talk to him about the psychic being, he will look at you as a madman. So better be a normal man than to be labeled as a madman by outsiders. But be a madman here. Next. It is possible to turn life in an act of adoration to the Supreme by the Spirit in one's works. For says the Gita, he who gives to me with a heart of adoration a leaf, a flower, a fruit, a cup of water, I take and enjoy that offering of his devotion. Do you understand what is meant here? He is not meaning being a leaf or a flower. He means if your psychic being accepts it, that means you are offering the leaf because the psychic being has asked it. You are offering a cup of water because the psychic being is asking it. Then it is the real devotion and I accept it. He won't accept it because our outer being gives it. You understand the difference? So even a simple work can be an offering if the psychic being is in the front. It should dominate our action. Next. In any cult or symbol, the significant rite or expressive figure is not only a moving and enriching aesthetic element, but a physical means by which the human being begins to make outwardly definite the emotional aspiration of his heart, to confirm it and dynamize it. Very clear? So whenever you go to a temple, or whenever you go to a mosque, or whenever you go to a church, depending upon your belief, it should not be mechanical. It should be what? Enriching the aesthetic element. But you can dispense with the support of outward symbols. And here a warning is given by Sri Aurobindo.
that if you have think that you have outgrown the need of a temple or a church or a mosque, be careful. Very few can dispense with the support of outward symbols. That is what in Bhakti Yoga. Lord Krishna also says that Nirguna Puja is very difficult. Kleshodhika Sarastesham. It is very difficult for people to concentrate on something which is unmanifest. Therefore, worship is a very necessary condition for aspiration. The indispensable surrender of all our will and words and activities to the Supreme is indeed only perfect and perfectly effective when it is the surrender of love. And now, there is an intellectual surrender and there is a surrender through heart. When he is talking about surrender of love, it is the heart to be surrendered. What now we are able to do is a partial surrender of the intellect, that yes, there is something there. But the love towards it is not there. And how to develop love? Easiest way I told you, mother here, the presence of mother. Next. Life in its very principle must be transformed. There are three principles in us. The principle of thinking, the principle of desiring, and the principle of action through the body. These three principles must change. The basis of your actions, the basis of your desires, the basis for your thoughts must change. What is our thoughts today? Egocentric. Whenever you do something, you always think of what happens to you. But you should always think what happens to the psychic being. At first it will be very hazy, very, very hazy, doesn't matter. You just always go on to thinking, what will the psychic being want from this situation and I will act like that. Next. The conversion made and completely made. The conversion from the outer being into the inner being, the psychic being coming into the forefront. First, life as it is a movement of desire and it has built in us as its center a desired soul, which refers to itself all the motions of the life and puts in them its own troubled hue and pain of the ignorant, half-lit, baffled endeavor. So this is what our external desire mind says. For a divine being, desire must be abolished and replaced by purer and firmer motive power. The tormented soul of desire dissolved in its stead, there must emerge the calm, strength, happiness. Next. Of a true vital being now concealed within us. Indirectly he is again talking about Nishkama Karma Yoga. Life as it is driven or led partly by the impulse of the life force, partly by the mind, which is mostly a servant and abettor of the ignorant life impulse. Clear? What we are doing now, we are not ignorant of the cosmic forces. We are only knowledgeable for day to day, for today's effects of what we are doing. But in part also its uneasy and not too luminous or competent guide and mentor for a divine life, the mind and the life impulse must cease to be anything but instruments. So this is the crux of what Sri Aurobindo always drives you. The body must be an instrument. The vital body must be an instrument. The mental body must be an instrument without its own choosing. It should not choose anything. It should be only an instrument of what? The psychic being. Next. How do you know that once you have started all these things and writing, do you remember I have asked you to write a diary? And when you are writing it daily, what happens? This happens. The inner equality increases. With the sense of true vital being, waiting for the greater direction it has to serve. It has to wait.
It is not just you ask the psychic being, I am your servant and it will come. It won't come. You will have to wait for it. And that waiting, you should remember, is not the psychic being's delay. It is a delay of a defect in any one of your three bodies or in all the bodies. Delay in the thinking process, a defect in the thinking process, a defect in the desire process, a defect in the way you act, in the use your physical body. Then even if you also surrender, he won't come. So if he doesn't come, don't think that he has not heard. He has heard. Even before you have this inspiration now, he has been preparing you from thousands of years for this aspiration. So it is he who is preparing you. So don't think he is not hearing you. The only thing is, instead of blaming him, the God, for our situation, you try to find out the defect in our three bodies. Next. A little of the divine person may reveal itself in some light, power, bliss, love out of the infinite. This may be a momentary revelation, a flash or a brief lived gleam that soon withdraws and waits for the preparation of the nature. Just as I was explaining to you, it may come like a bus, shows you the way, and then it's gone, but you know it is coming from that direction. A long and large and comprehensive working will then have begun, sometimes luminous or intense, sometimes slow and obscure. I would like that Sri Aurobindo must have written many times. Many times, slow and obscure. He said only sometimes. Many times, our approach towards the psychic being is slow and obscure. But sometimes, it is very luminous or intense. And you remember, whenever you are near his samadhi, and that samadhi doesn't mean Sri Aurobindo Ashram at Pondicherry, your heart, if you can pull him. He's always there, the only thing is you'll have to tune to him. And naturally, the best place to tuning will be where his samadhi fragments are there. Utilize it. You should meditate more there. You should spend more time there. But not just an ideal sitting. If you just close your eyes and sit, it is inertia. Your mental inertia will dominate you. That is where you should be careful about all these three, the Pisacha, the Rakshasa and the Asura. And thigh bone, that was the accident, very clearly shows the real powers of Aurobindo. If you read what he has said about it, you read and try to understand what he has done in that particular incident, and if you can remember that and sit before his samadhi, you read them. I don't want to go because I have a constraint of slides to be shown, but I think you are understanding. You read that portion in Sri Aurobindo's life where he has explained what that fall was meant to whom and how it was diverted to him. So all these, if you can understand, you can understand the link between brain and heart, and then sit there in the samadhi. Something miraculous happens. So when you are meditating also, you should know that you should have a preparation. Without a preparation, you sit and meditate, it means you are inertia, mental inertia. Next. Sometimes and many times, what happens is, we feel that we have been left, the being to its own resources. The divine force goes to the background. But there the faith must be there. It has never gone into the background. It is always pressing you. It is our physical inertia which feels like that. So don't worry how you feel, whether you are in an exalted mood or you feel tired. Be regular in your sadhana, but with preparation, with preparation. Next. This force cannot be a smooth and even process. You remember that.
So you don't have a straight, steady growth. It will always be ups and downs. Maybe you think about the downs more because you are not aware of the ups. The ups are always there. Have faith in that. Next. This is the most important part. The descent can happen only when a nature is prepared and conditioned for its complete rule and its all-compassing presence. So first, your thoughts must be able to bear those noble thoughts. Yesterday, or two, 3 days back, I was seeing the film Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel of Gujarat, not of Andhra. Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel of Andhra is sitting there. And there is a discussion of who will rule the country. Gandhi says, leave it to Jinnah. Leave it to Jinnah. They say, no, you are a Mahatma, you can do it. We can't do it. Had they done that then, what would have happened? We don't know. Because even now when I say these things, our egoistic... Freedom struggle. They said Jinnah. Gandhi said, let Jinnah rule, the Muslim rule, we will serve the country. They say all in one tone, you are a Mahatma. Thereby accepting they are not Mahatmas, they are egocentric forces. And I don't know what would have happened. I'm just seeing and saying, the nature prepared those noble souls who worked for the freedom of the country. Their nature was not yet prepared and conditioned. And even when Sri Aurobindo says that if the independence of India is not without Pakistan, then what may happen? India may again become a slave country. And we who read his messages, can't we move to his spirit? He is warning it. And you say Aurobindo will do it. If Sri Aurobindo could have done it, he would have done it already. He will not wait for you. You have to change. The nature prepared and conditioned must be ours before that supramental descent can happen. How, I don't know. Because he said, integral yoga, after the psychic being comes into the front, has to be an individualized yoga. So we stop here.